What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, episode 109, How Athletic Training Has Changed, recorded September 3rd, 2014. Our special guest today is Bubble Wilson. Bubble works for Memorial Hermann. He's been on the podcast several times, does a lot to help us out here in Pasadena ISD. So you can hear some extra noise in the background. Again, we're sharing a room with football, and so hopefully they're not too loud today, but it is what it is. So, again, Bubba Wilson will be pretty much telling the stories of how athletic training has changed throughout the years, and so it'll be very enjoyable just to hear some of these stories. I am your host, Jeremy Jackson, and with me today is... All right, so we didn't practice this. So when I say with me today is, and then Jose, you would say Jose. So I say with me today is. You're going to say your name.
Oh, Jose Silva.
Skiro Wing.
Adela Marquez.
Yeah, you got talking to the mic.
Adela Marquez.
I'm Bubba. You know, it's the only time they ever get shy is in this.
Yeah. And?
Jessica Macedo.
All right. So, and in the end, we'll do that too. And I'll say, all right. And so for Jeremy and such, and we'll go around the room again if you guys are still in here when we finish up. So, again, we didn't have a whole lot of time to practice, and I forgot to do that. So, if you want to check out the conversation, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. You can get the live CEUs as long as you register through the business hangouts thing. So, go to the CEU event, live CEU event on the sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. You can ask questions or tell stories on Bubba using hashtag TheSMB. There's the Ustream social feature, which hopefully Adrian can see that. And so then pretty much the links to all those are on the website, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. All right. So we're going to go ahead and start off with questions with Bubba.
Mr. Wills, tell us who you are and what you do.
My name is Bubba Wilson. I'm a licensed and certified athletic trainer. So for those that are unfamiliar, licensing is through the state of Texas. Certification is through a national board of certification. And I am an outreach athletic trainer with Memorial Hermann Hospital System. And my area is the Southeast Hospital, which basically puts me Highway 288 and I-10 all the way to the Louisiana border and down to Lake Jackson. I have all that territory. And I visit schools and sports clubs and different things and try to help them out in multiple ways.
When did you start as an athletic trainer?
It's kind of be a two-question thing. Is that professionally or as a student myself?
As a student.
All right. As a student, it was in high school. So my high school years, I was a student athletic trainer, went to Baylor University to be a student trainer and get my education so I could get licensed, and started in 1991 was my first professional job where I was actually earning a paycheck and doing this for a living.
Tell us about your first 2 years as an athletic trainer.
My first 2 years as an athletic trainer working professionally was an education every day and was the ultimate in on-the-job training. I think it's important to understand that college gives you a base knowledge, but you don't know a whole lot coming out in any field realistically until you get out and start working in it. You basically can't do you know enough to do the job, and then you go from there, and everything else is on-the-job training, and I still learn today. There's so much more to learn.
Tell us about how you built trust with coaches that did not know what an athletic trainer was.
All right, hang on. You're doing good asking questions there, Jessica, but we gotta let them tell a little bit more. We gotta get them to tell some stories there.
Sorry.
I had to step away because football players are acting like monkeys.
Isn't that synonymous?
You said it, not me. All right, so again, tell me a little bit more about the first 2 years as an athletic trainer. You're fresh out of grad school. You said it's constant on-the-job training.
It is. And I think it's like anything. And I said this when one of my jobs I've had in the past, I worked in the office with Dr. Walt Lowe. And I said then, and I'll say it about my first few years out, I knew a whole lot more than I thought I did. And I knew a whole lot less than I thought I did. And I think that's pretty common in anything that you do. if you think about it, you have this base of knowledge, like, okay, but now I've got to make decisions. I got to evaluate a kid and say, is this something that needs to be referred to a physician? Is this something we can treat? Okay, if we treat it and it doesn't get better, what are we going to do? How do we tell the parents this? How do I talk about this? And really, the on-the-job training, a lot of it is learning how to deal with people, how to handle parents, how to talk to coaches. And you got to make sure, like, from a coaching standpoint, I tell them, I'm not the guy that hurt them. I'm just the sorry guy that's got to come in and tell you they're hurt. You know, I've said for years that my ultimate job, if I was in a high school today, my ultimate goal would be to show up at 6, 6:30 in the morning and leave when I'm done that day and never see a soul in my training room. But it's not going to happen. You know, I don't get paid by the athlete. And so once they understand that your job is to get them out of there as safely as possible and quickly as possible, and that you actually are showing up and doing your work and trying to get them better, I think that trust is easy to get, but that's a hard thing to learn. And we can argue it all day long, but it's something you just – as to what's the best way to learn it, but it's just something you've got to do and practice and experience. It's like driving. The first few times behind the wheel, you're not real comfortable. I don't know what to go in the first few times and say, hey, coach, starting quarterback needs to go to the doctor, you know. You don't know what to do, but if you've got a good coach that's going to work with you a little bit, he'll help you learn at the same time. You know, and you got to be willing to educate the coaches on the injury itself.
All right, so tell me some stories. You said it's a lot of on-the-job training, so some personal stories about how athletic training was within your first two, maybe 5 years, some of that stuff.
You know, really, in some ways, what's old is new again now, but back then, when I first got into it, we didn't have policies for all this stuff. We didn't have a heat policy. We didn't have a lightning policy. We didn't have this stuff. You went out, you practiced. There was no set period of time that you had to wait between practices. We had true two-a-days back then. There was no period of time you had to wait. We just did our thing as it was always done. Now, we did give water during practice. I'm not that old. But, you know, a lot of it was we didn't, you know, if it's raining and lightning, unless it was really, really close, and you, all joking aside a little bit, you feel the hair on your arm stand up and you know that it's close, we went in. But we didn't have to have a policy that was written and improved that said this is when we're going to go in. We just did it. You know, you talk to the coach and say, that's pretty close. What do you think? And, yeah, let's go. You know, but now it's at this many miles. And not all that's bad and not all that's good. I think there's a happy medium in some of those things, but – there was no concussion law. There was no – none of this stuff was there back when I came out. And it's not classes that we took that we understood that little did I know I'm going to make a heat policy for a school district or an ozone policy for a school district. That was never discussed back when I was in school. It's hot in Texas. Let's go, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I definitely agree that there's good and there's bad. I feel that it has been moving more towards the policies to kind of protect and provide backing for the athletic trainer, you know, as far as the administration, the coaches and that kind of thing. So like the concussion policy, since we have that in place and it's, you know, mandated, then they can't go against it without losing their job.
Right.
Or with the heat or the lightning stuff. Hey, well, coach, I'm taking me and my kids inside. If you stay outside, it's on you.
Right. So. And I think, you know, you got to tell them, I tell them all the time, especially with concussion law, whether you agree with it or not, it is what it is. And it's better than a federal law that could have happened if we didn't have one. But, you know, I say I'm not going to be the guy that's got my hand on the Bible and raising my right hand telling them to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. This is what it is, and this is how we're going to handle it. And some of it boils down to common sense. Now, not everybody has common sense either. And so, I mean, I get it, but there was just – back then it was a time when we did not have to, you know – fight those battles, so to speak, or have to deal with those type of issues.
All right, so any other, like, so about, like, in the first years, maybe something you look back and you're like, now looking back at that, I really wish I'd done that differently, or had to, you know, because I think back to my first 3 years. My first year I was an assistant, and then about 1 week into the season, the guy left to go take a different job. So I was stuck that whole year by myself. And then the third year, they just couldn't hire anybody to be the assistant. And so I wish as a young professional, I had somebody to mentor me, somebody else that I could say, hey, can you check this out? Because there was one kid that hurt his ankle, came out of the game, but he was always whining, always complaining.
Right.
And so I just sent him back in there. He ended up having a plate put in his leg, and I'm like,
right.
I wish somebody had told me, hey, take your time and check him out, or here, let me check him out as well.
Right. And some of that is, I guess we pigeonhole, you know, you're always complaining, you know, it's not going to be anything again. And I think there are always going to be those times where we're going to get bit in the butt, and we've got to, you know, do our due diligence. But again, there's a lot of things I wish I'd have done differently, honestly. I can't think of, off the top of my head, one specific time where I go, I think the biggest thing back then, we knew what ACL tears were. MRI had just come out. And I wish I'd understood them better, but, you know, because you'd still try to play in a brace, you know. We didn't have ACL reconstructions in college when I was in. They just took it out and said, okay, put a brace on, good luck to you. And then we started reconstructing my first couple of years out. So I wish I'd have known more about those, because I didn't know that much about the rehab. But all that's changed, you know, about the rehab and all those things that went with it. And you know, progress is good in a lot of ways. I mean, we now know when my dad played professional ball, you had a trick knee. Well, you either could play or you couldn't. We didn't realize. And they would go have surgery and take all their meniscus out. Well, then they realized, oh, that's kind of bad. We might need that meniscus. Let's try to find a way to spare it. So arthroscopy happened. The first arthroscopy, there was no TV camera. You're looking through a little telescope type thing, trying to do all this work. And then fiber optics, and we get TV, and, you know, things go. And so I think to just say it, there's a lot of good that's come out of it all. And there's still some stuff that I think common sense could rule the day, but we are what we are as a society in that regard.
All right. So this is the one that Jessica asked earlier. So in those first couple of years, so for somebody that's new, I think we were talking with Dr. Knobloch, who can't be here today. And he said something about the athletic trainers that get in trouble or the ones that have something to prove are the ones that are the youngest ones. So they're the ones that are quickest to be defensive. And so it's easy for me as an athletic trainer, you know, I just graduated. I have a degree. I have a license and certification. Don't you tell me what to do, coach.
Right.
So how did you kind of combat that and then build that trust with the coaches?
I had great mentors, plain and simple. Like I said earlier, I figured out what I knew and what I didn't know. And I was willing to learn on what I didn't know. I also was real. I had a good coaching staff that helped, but I didn't try to say every time, I'm the athletic trainer, you're the coach. There's times you've got to say that. If I'm holding you out of practice and the coach wants you in, I win that battle, and I've got to be willing to fight for that battle. Or if I need to send you to the doctor and he doesn't think you need to go, that's not his position to state that and make that happen. I've got to do my job. You know, it's not – I don't think there's – I'm going to show him everything that I'm the smartest guy in the room is detrimental to us in the profession. I think you've got to know your limitations, pick your battles. That's a hard thing to learn. Is that battle worth fighting? You know, and it's funny because I hired someone as one of my assistants who was a former student trainer of mine. And she would get mad when I wouldn't – when something I used to get upset about when she was a student, I didn't care about that much anymore when she was my assistant. Over time, we grow. I've learned that that was a battle that wasn't worth fighting anymore. I had a bigger issue to deal with at the time maybe than if this was getting done. And so you got to learn, and that's just part of growth. You got to learn what to pick and choose and what to deal with. And sometimes you're going to put your foot in your mouth, you know. And I think the biggest thing once you do that is accepting it, admitting to it, and let's move on. The more defensive you get, it seems like the worse it gets. If anybody's ever gotten in trouble and tried to lie their way out of it and talk their way out of it, it never works. Same thing's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much you just own up to it and say, hey. Right.
And move on. And most of the time they'll go, okay. And somebody will go, put their arm around and go, now here in the next time, think about this. And you go, oh, I never thought about that. You know, and don't be willing to go ask, you know, don't be afraid to go ask for help and go talk to your AD or your head coach or your principal and go, hey, this happened. Here's what I did. may have been wrong, but in the moment, this seemed like the best idea. And they go, yeah, probably not the best, but we can deal with that. And as long as you let them know, you know, you may get reprimanded. Okay, fine, I screwed up. That's on me. But it can be handled in a manner that it doesn't blow up and become a big ordeal.
All right, so you talked about some of the policies that have come about. What are some of the other positive changes that you've seen since how long have you been doing athletic training?
This is my 24th year.
So in 24 years, I mean, there's been a good bit of changes in this is my 11th year. But talk about some of the positive changes you've seen in the past 24 years.
Well, let's just go back to concussions. I think we understand them better, but we also understand what we don't know. You know, and sometimes knowing what you don't know is better than knowing what you do know. And we know that we don't understand a lot about them, but we understand so much more. And for instance, when I came out, and this is somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but if I'm evaluating you, Jeremy, for a concussion, I held up two fingers and said how many, and you'd said three, I would, you know, hey, go back in, hit the guy in the middle, you know. And then it became, well, why don't you sit down? And then we'd let you go back in. Then it was, okay, you're done for the day. And then he would go back in. And then it became, you're done, and we need to make sure this occurs before you go back in. We've progressed. And so those are positive things. Again, we used to let ACL tears try to play in a brace. We found out that doesn't work. We create other injuries and bigger injuries and further problems. Back when I started, ACL reconstructions took you about 18 months to get over before you were playing again. You know, that's down to about 9 months now. That's, you know, in so that's significant. So there's a lot of things that have happened that are good. You know, some of the stuff that, and I think, no, some of it's bad. Some of the stuff we used to read about in a textbook that you go, your professor that was an athletic trainer say, I've seen one of those in 15 years, and now due to some other reasons, we're seeing, you know, one a week or something like that, depending on the setting you're in. You know, that's some other changes from the bad, but again, we grow. Medicine grows, and that's important. And that's what I try to tell young athletic trainers to understand about dealing with coaches and coaches to understand. And let's just take the concussion policy, the concussion law. Whether you like it or not, it doesn't matter. It's a law. But you can't pick and choose what you want to agree with and utilize. And so by that being said, back in the day when I was in school and even leading into my first few years, you had to go, before VHS and all that came into vogue, they had to go take reel-to-reel game film and get it developed. They would sleep in the parking lot in their car, and the guy would knock on their window when it was developed and give them their film, and they would watch it and trade it with the other school. Well, now you have Huddle. You do it all off a server.
Right.
You have the zone blitz and the zone read offense and all these things that people do now. Well, that didn't exist back when I was growing up. And it's the same thing with a concussion. You may not like it, okay, but it is what it is. But you can't pick and choose what you want. If you want to pick and choose what you want, ACL tears don't come back anymore. And they'll go, well, we can get it back in 9 months. Not back when you played. And so back when you played, we treated concussions differently. We don't do that now. So you got to take it all as it is or none of it and don't coach. And if you can have that conversation calmly with people, they tend to understand a little bit about what you're saying. And to me, that's the policies is the biggest changes, but some of those policies are good. You know, I think it's good to have a policy that talks about lightning. Now, common sense says when to go off, but my idea of close and your idea of close is different. And of which I was lucky enough to work for Coach Emery Ballard, who invented the wishbone offense. He had a vision issue in one eye and it never failed. Lightning struck close on the side he couldn't see very well out of. So he never saw the lightning. Same thing. We've got everybody inside, and I'm trying to get coaches and varsity in, but every other team's in. And he's like, I didn't see any lightning. And they're going, luckily coaches help go, coach, it's right there. And we'd mercifully go inside. But, you know, just little things like that. If lightning's such a little thing.
Yeah, you know. Such a little thing. Yeah, and I mean, even that's the thing. Since I've changed, you know, it was, all right, well, you have to see it, and then you count, and then you have to convince the coaches. And now we have emails. We have an app on our phone.
Right.
Send us an alert, hey, it's within this, get inside.
Right, but you got issues with that. How does that app know what's going on here? Well, it's called meteorology and technology, and it's stuff we don't understand, and I trust it, you know?
Yeah.
So, but you're always going to have those battles.
All right, so we've talked about some of the positive changes, and maybe we'll come back to some more, but what are some of the negative things that you see that have that have changed since you started?
Year-round play, which, you, as you well know, is one of my soapbox issues. I think from a standpoint of somebody that has a daughter in high school, helicopter parents never letting that kid take responsibility on their own for things that are going on. But year-round play creates a lot of those issues too. We played year-round when I was growing up. We played all sports. We didn't specialize. We specialized about our junior or senior year in high school if we knew we were really good in one. We played one summer league team in baseball. You didn't play in the fall. Fall was for football. You didn't play baseball back then. The only Tommy John surgery we knew about was from Tommy John. You know, it wasn't the guy down the street. Liz Frank was something you saw in a textbook and never dealt with until recently. That's one of those. Some of that is not necessarily overused. Some of the other detriments, I guess, would be we're bigger, faster, and stronger, and maybe to a detriment of our bodies. We know our muscles hypertrophy, they get bigger. We can get faster. We can create a concentric muscle contraction that's very powerful, but our ligaments aren't increasing in size. Our meniscus doesn't get bigger. Our articular surfaces don't get bigger and thicker and firmer. And we just train. We train to bench press, squat, and power clean, but why are we doing that? Well, that's what we've always done. Well, is that the right thing for us to be doing? And I think we create more injuries sometimes by the way we train and never switching it up. And my personal opinion is, why does a lineman need to do a plyometric jump? I don't understand it. All it does for them is beat up their shins.
Unless you're J.J. Watt and you have to jump to block passes.
But that's why he gets $100 million.
Yep, that's why he gets $100
million. You know, he's special in a lot of ways. But on average, you know, but some of these are my own personal preferences and opinions, but I do believe that we overtrain, and I think sometimes we train ourselves into injuries. We've got to have rest. You know, I used to argue with one coach I had that if you're tired and dragging, you got to know the players are tired and dragging because they're the ones running around and hitting each other. And so maybe, you know, a little break would be good for everybody.
Right.
But his idea was, well, if you're tired, then we'll need to work you harder. But you learn to deal with those situations too.
Yeah, as my oldest son is 4, we're just now putting him in karate. And we're like, oh, we'll try it for 1 month. And then we'll see. So he really likes it. He does really well. But then we're like, well, we don't want to do this every single month because then it becomes a year-round thing. And I'm firmly against year-round sports, period.
Right. I think karate's a little different, though, as long as it's not 7 days a week and, you know, it's okay to go on vacation. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's okay that we're going to take a week off and go do this. I think when it's bad, and this is somewhat of an oversimplification, is if I was to knock on your door and say, hey, can Jeremy come out and play? And your mom goes, no, sorry, he's watching his last instructional video from his last pitching lesson that he's got to critique that first. That's over the top.
Yeah.
You know, karate's got some great elements in it. And it's like, you know, and again, in my opinion, as long as it's not 7 days a week, we're not – that is not a repetitive motion. We're not just throwing, you know, or kicking with our right leg every day.
Right.
You know, so it's got some benefit to it. But I'm with you. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. It's just one of those decisions, you know, you have to make. And, you know, I was talking with Jose here. He plays on two soccer teams, right?
Yes.
And so right now, they're, you know, soccer is off season. But during our high school soccer season, are you playing on another team as well?
Mm-hmm.
So you're playing on two teams. Pretty much all year?
Yes.
So, again, and we kind of had a conversation briefly about, you know, hey, you're more likely to get injured because you're doing the same thing, you know, try swimming or playing basketball or something like that. And so, you know, just from the conversations I've had with you and then, you know, other athletic trainers, that's one thing I've definitely, like you said, we're trying to train them too much. We're trying to make them professionals when they're 14, when they're not until they're 20.
Right. And even then, maybe not even then. I mean, you know, if you take baseball, is the biggest, one of the biggest historical year-round offenders, though you can make arguments now for AAU basketball, club volleyball, and soccer. You know, if you play more baseball games as a skeletally immature athlete than a professional does, there's something wrong with that. Those guys are done growing and they're getting paid. Why are you playing 160 games in a calendar year in baseball? But to back up for a second, because it just hit me, we you said something. One of the things that we didn't have back when I first came out, we didn't have all this influx of these ACL injuries. In college, I can count five. In the five football seasons I was there, I can count five, and I may be overcounting, five ACL tears that we had. And the funny thing is all but one of them were contact injuries, where now it's the other way around. 75% of them are non-contact injuries. So that still goes to my argument a little bit about, are we overtraining them and creating injuries? If you get tackled and you tear your ACL, it's unfortunate, but there's at least something that you can wrap your head around as to why it happened. But right. I'm just out there running in space, and the next thing I know, I'm shot by a sniper, and my ACL's torn. You know, that's a little bit hard to stomach sometimes.
Yeah, and then, you know, obviously people are going to say, well, then they weren't trained to land properly. So,
well, but,
or,
yeah.
You know, whatever.
Well, there's a lot of ways, but I think there's a lot of things we can do to train better and more efficiently and effectively, and one of those things we can do is rest. Take some time off. We can go train other ways and do other things, but there's, you know, the phrase cross-training is there for a reason, you know, and if all I did was play basketball and cut all year long, the law of averages has got to catch up to me at some point. You know, I can stretch a rubber band out repetitively over time, and at some point it's going to break. At what point, we don't know. So if I keep throwing a baseball or I keep, you know, dribbling a basketball, at some point, odds are good, I'm going to have something happen to me. And we hope it's, you know, just an ankle sprain, but it may be more than that.
All right, so any other specific negative things as far as athletic training? I know, you know, we were talking about the club sports and that causing more injuries. So any specifically to athletic training trends?
I think more so back then than now, the head coach had a lot of power in the injury realm and in that safety realm. I can remember getting a talking to, we'll put it that way, because a middle school game was called by the officials because of weather, and I just happened to be the individual that had that answered the question as the head coach as to what was going on, and I was reprimanded because it wasn't my job to call the game. It was his. Well, number one, he wasn't out there. He was inside, and I had to remind him of that. But I didn't call the game either. The officials did. And so he goes, well, that's my job. I said, then you need to go talk to them because they called the game. But sometimes you're just at the wrong spot at the wrong time.
Yeah,
you know, and I think that happens a lot. Again, you didn't hurt them. You're just the sorry individual at the moment that's got to go tell them that somebody is injured that they may be counting on. And I get it. It's human nature. We're upset and we want them there. But, you know, one of the other things I had to learn early is when they would gripe at me and go, well, I need him. Okay, coach, it's their ankle. He can't get in a stance. He can't fire out. He can't sprint. He can't stop. He can't jump. And he can't move laterally. But if you need him that bad, I'll let you put him back in the game. And he'd be like, oh, fine. And he'd go get somebody else. I think sometimes you have to explain to them why they can't do what they can do. And I have no problem. As I got older, I have no problem explaining to you, if you're the coach, this is why they can't do that. I'm not going to justify why I'm holding them out, but I'll justify what's going on with that injury. I think you need to understand that. But you're not going to. I don't want you to question me as to, well, why is it going to be this long? I tell you, they'll be ready when they're ready. Our averages of understanding are within this window. You know, how quick do they heal? What else going on? All those things. But I'll at least explain to you, this is why they can't do it. And if you understand that, typically a lot of those other issues go away, in my opinion.
So that kind of comes back to what you said in the beginning there is wisdom over the years, you know, just learning to
right.
to be calm and patient and explaining things rather than because I said so.
Right, because I'm an athletic trainer, so deal with it. And it doesn't work that way. And, you know, I think the greatest line as a parent is because I said so, because you're the parent. But you can't do that in that setting. And again, it comes with just experience. And I was lucky in college. We got to make some of those decisions at times where I was at baseball in the fall all by myself. I had to make those decisions. I had to talk to those coaches. So I was lucky in that when I got into my first job, I'd done those things. There's a lot of individuals coming out now that have never been allowed to make those decisions, and they don't know how to handle it. They don't know about calling a parent, you know, but these are minors. You've got to talk to the parent. And you know, wisdom's a good thing. Age is a good thing sometimes. I wish I was a lot younger and knew what I do now, but mm-hmm. we can't do that, you know.
Yeah. And that's the thing I try to, like with the students, you know, I tell people in my sports medicine classes, essentially I'm teaching them how to do my job. And so hopefully I'm passing that down, because I feel that in high school we didn't have sports medicine when I was there.
Right.
And then in college I went to Houston Baptist and we had an internship. And mm-hmm. through my 5 years, I had 4 different athletic trainers and no real consistency, no real mentorship. I mean, there was, you know, the athletic trainers right. there, they did what they could without any sort of real plan. It was just kind of hope what you learn. And there wasn't anybody saying, you know, these are things you need to do. These things you need to look for. These are things you need to be thinking about, or, you know, even compassion. Honestly, for a large part of my life, I've lacked compassion. And so it was really just kind of about me, what I needed to do, and not what right. I need to do to help them.
Right. So. But one thing I will say about this profession is we're going to help each other out. Not necessarily right. in covering the game. Hey, I can't be there. I got you. But it's, if you know, I've said some of the best continuing education we get would be if you and I played each other and something happened and we call each other or meet up a month later and go, hey, what happened with so-and-so? Oh, let me tell you about this whole – that's educational. And we're more than willing in this profession to do that. Here's a little cool pearl about this. Here's a trick with this that I learned. Hey, I've never thought about it that way. And we are – we're not secretive. You know, there's nothing magical about what we do. This isn't a specific offensive play or defensive play or an alignment this or pitch count that. We're going to tell each other, hey, this worked for me. You might want to give it a shot. You know, and I think that's the beauty of this profession. You know, we're going to help each other out.
All right, so when we were talking with Dr. Yellen last year, at some point last school year, he was saying there's about 41,000 athletic trainers. In the game that our football team played last week, they didn't have athletic trainers. They had coaches right. that ran on the field and said, get up, get up, get up. Here in Texas, it's kind of surprising because there's a lot of athletic trainers in Texas. What do you think is going to end up moving those schools towards having an athletic trainer at their games?
Unfortunately, a catastrophic event. And I'll give you the example, and I'm not harping on them, but this is the best example I can give. 6-8 years ago, maybe, I don't remember, there was a death of a football player in Dallas ISD. Not to get into the particulars, but basically Dallas ISD, Fort Worth ISD, and Houston ISD all only have what are called stadium athletic trainers where they're not on the campuses. This is the first year that Dallas ISD has athletic trainers on the campuses. Part of that stems from that incident of they realize we need somebody there taking care of the athletes. And to back up with that being said, one of the other things to learn early is you got to temper your own enthusiasm during a game. You know, you get all wound up and go, come on, come on, and you can go back in. Maybe they can't. And so it's learning to temper that and realize, okay, take a step back for a second, count to 10. Now let's go look at them and make sure we're looking at this from the right angle. But to get back on topic here, Dallas, this is their first year to have athletic trainers on campus. You know, Houston ISD has some on some campuses, but it's few and far between. And unfortunately, typically nothing happens until something bad happens. And then there's a outcry, and when they say they can't afford it and all this other stuff, the money is found. And ultimately, over time, every campus, let's see, they changed the classification setting. So in my opinion, every campus, hopefully soon, 10 years, 6A and 5A will have an athletic trainer on site, on campus, at least one. It's never a perfect scenario, but that would be the best we could do right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something they're working towards, and I don't know, it's tough whenever we go to those games and we see those players are down. And I mean, I've been asked, coach, hey coach, I'm the athletic trainer. Can you need some help? He said, no, we got it. Okay. Right. Hey coach, we have a doctor here on the sidelines. Would you like him? No, we're good.
And then 5 minutes later they want you, but yeah. But if you think back to when you were just by yourself, and I lived that for a lot of years too. So you go cover the football game. Nobody's at home volleyball.
Right.
You know? And then we got assistance, and we didn't know what to do with ourselves. He's like, wow, how do we handle all this? This is crazy. We can cover this. And then you realize you're still busy. Mm-hmm. You know, now we're all begging for 3. You know, so baby steps.
Yeah, baby steps. And I think I don't know, one of the things that we've started doing, and I guess just for our own knowledge, is we keep track of our hours. And then that way, if there's a question of, hey, what are you guys doing, or how much are y'all working, then we have an idea.
Right.
I feel like our administration, Coach Shant and the people before him, are really supportive of athletic trainers and what we're doing. And so it kind of starts there. And then so from our administration level, they kind of went up and got with the superintendent and said, hey, you know, this is something we need to do, take care of, to make sure we're not losing quality athletic trainers and only having rookies basically coming in, or people who get rejected everywhere else. And so, you know, we talked with Chris Shattuck about professionalism, and I told him when he was on here, you know, I was wearing shorts to SWATA and probably a polo or t-shirt even. And then I was kind of mad at him because his conversation or his talk was about not wearing shorts, you know, being professional.
Right.
And when I look back at some of those pictures sitting right there of the podcast, I mean, I think I had Dr. Summer Ott here on the podcast, and I was wearing a t-shirt, gym shorts, and Crocs. We didn't have video back then, so it didn't matter. It didn't matter as much, but there's still pictures. And that was the first time I'd met her. What am I portraying? Like, how sloppy am I?
And I think we've talked about this, and I agree with what you're saying and what Chris said. But I think you got to look at it from. I wore shorts at work in the school too, but I was going from inside to outside, back to inside to back to outside. You never knew when you were going to go, what the environment is. So they understood that part.
Right.
I think in those other settings where you're going out and you're representing, then by all means, you know, look professional.
Right.
You know, a t-shirt, we can argue that. You know, the Crocs, we can definitely argue. You know, but a t-shirt outside at practice, nobody's going to argue that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and did you come in from something outside to this and didn't have time to change? Yeah, there's always instances, you know.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I think just the sheer appearance. So now if I go to conferences, if I go to something in the administration building, I'm not wearing gym shorts and a t-shirt. This is athletic training. I'm probably wearing khaki pants and a polo, or even, you know, khaki shorts and a polo, because everybody that sees me, this is passing athletic training. I'm representing me and every other athletic trainer in the district. And
right.
Even more beyond that, because those people may go to other districts and say, man, athletic trainers are sloppy. Or, you know what? Athletic trainers are professionals.
Right.
Based on what they see of me.
Right. So, well, and one of my big pet peeves in life during a football game is not having your shirt tucked in and looking at y'all. I don't know if you do or don't, but to me, it's a professionalism thing. If my shirt is tucked in, it's perception versus reality. The perception is I look professional. I know what I'm doing. I may be an idiot, but they don't know that at that moment. You know, and so again, it's how do you represent yourself in that regard? You know, if I showed up every day to school as a professional and I didn't even fix, I don't have much hair, but if I didn't fix it and showed up in a hat and late all the time, I'm not a very professional individual in that regard. But just backing up, because I just thought of a story a minute ago talking about keeping track of hours. When I took the job at Kingwood High School, in my interview, the principal at the time was a great guy, and he basically – He was phenomenal in what he asked. I was married and I had a daughter on the way that was going to get be born that first semester. And he said, do you and your wife understand what you're getting yourself into? And I said, yes, sir, I understand. He said, does your wife? And I said, yes, sir, she understands. He goes, you know you're by yourself. And I said, yes, sir. And he goes, you know you're going to work more hours than anybody on this campus. And I said, yes, I do. And he said, okay, I want to make sure you understand that. He says, now understand this. He goes, I've got your back. If you need to go somewhere, because again, I got there at 6:30 in the morning. I didn't leave until everything was done. So the earliest I was going to leave is going to be 5:30, 6:00. He said, if you need to go somewhere, i.e. go get your car inspected, get a haircut, do those things I could not do. He says, you try to do it when it doesn't interfere with athletics. He goes, obviously emergencies are one thing. He said, let us know. He said, it's no problem. And if anybody gives you any grief, you send them to me. I said, okay. So I went one day and made a coffee run for the administrative office. And as I was coming back in, a teacher stopped and made a snide remark. It must be nice to leave campus, and started griping. I said, you know, it's interesting you're upset about that. The principal would like to talk to you about that. And to his credit, he kept his word. And he let her know what I did. And he asked her, he said, this was on a Thursday. He said, he's been here since 6:00. He's going to leave about 10 o'clock tonight. Do you want to switch with him? And she said, no, sir. And he goes, then leave it alone and you go do your job. And I went by later and said, thank you, because I told you I had your back. He understood, again, he understood what I was doing and having to deal with, and he said, I'm your biggest support, and he was. And that's nice to have when your administration understands that you're not there from 7 to 3. You're a lot of, as you kids will know, our day starts for the most part at 3 o'clock, you know, and doesn't end until whenever. And the game, just because the game's over, we got to come back and clean up and do things. And what if we had to send a kid to the emergency room? We're going to check on them. So my day may end at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And I've been up since 6, you know. So, you know, a teacher takes their paperwork home to work on grading. I get that. I'm not denigrating what a teacher does. But ours doesn't end at the same time theirs does. Right. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. They just go, oh, well, you don't teach any classes, or you teach this one. Well, I'll trade with you any day. I'll go teach your biology for about a week. We'll switch real quick because you won't want that. You know, they don't want what we do.
All right, so go back to the principal. I don't feel like I don't know if it's a people pleaser or a real, like, I'm friendly, but I'm not someone who gets buddy buddy with a lot of people easily.
Right.
And how could I get that support that you were getting from your principal? Do you think that mostly stemmed from him, or is that something that you, because of what you did?
I think, can I answer that as yes? I think you've got to have principals that understand what you do and get what you do. That's paramount. My last job, my principal there was phenomenal. He was an ex-coach. He understood athletic trainers. I had coffee with him every morning at 7:15. Well, he would be in the commons. Kids are coming in, getting ready to go to class. We had coffee every day if he was on campus. And all we did was talk. It may be nothing more than, did you watch the game last night? But we talked. I think you've got to be visible. You've got to get outside of your athletic training room. You don't need to go sit in the principal's office and take up their time. But get to know the secretaries. Let them know who you are. And be available, you know. Because they understand that you're going to get out of your little world down there and be in theirs. And every now and then they're going to come to yours and need something from you. And once they realize there can be a benefit on both sides, you get a lot accomplished. I got a lot accomplished in those 7:15 coffee meetings. You know, he'd be like, hey, what's going on? What's going on down there? Do you need anything? What's happening? How's so-and-so's health? We're going to talk about some kid's injury. He has a right to know about that injury. It's his student. Mm-hmm. But we're going to get a lot of things done, you know. And every now and then they go, hey, come down. I want to run something by you. And, or it'd be, hey, come down. I got this $1,000. What do you need? Hey, hello. You know, right. So it's been a win-win. And it's, again, a guy that understood what was going on, that understood our profession and understood that we were underfunded in ways and needed certain things. And he was willing to help out with that. But at the same time, if he needed a favor from me, you bet he was going to get it.
Right.
You know, you need to put a kid into this class as a favor for the remainder of the semester. Can we not put them in this class and put them in this class? Yeah, okay, I'll do that for you. You know, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And I think that's important. You can't expect, a lot of people expect others to do for them but are never willing to do for those. I can get a lot accomplished. You can get a lot accomplished just by hanging out and talking to people on occasion. You don't have to do it every day. He and I had a relationship. We had known each other a while. It was, you know, it was simpler. I knew the secretaries. I knew the attendance people. You know, they knew who I was. There was no, well, we have an athletic trainer, but we never see him except for when he checks his mail. You know, I was out and about a little bit.
Yeah.
Plus, I like to jack with people, so it was always fun to go mess with somebody when, you know, if nothing big was going on. So.
Yeah. It's something I definitely, I mean, for us here, we're a completely different part of the building, so it's a lot harder for me to be intentional about walking up there and just talking and hanging out with people, because, you know, everybody's busy. And like I said, I'm not much of a talker.
Right.
So it's a little harder for me to just hang out and start up a conversation with somebody that doesn't really want to talk, you know.
Right.
But
well, and what I did there is I got to work at 6. My assistant got there at 6:30. I left the athletic training room at 7, typically, depending on what was going on. And I went up and was going to check the mail. If I had anything to deal with from the night before or anything going on, I would handle it then, and he and I would have coffee, or me and the associate, you know, would be around there too. And then she would finish up. So one of us made it a point to go up there a couple times a day. We were going to check the mail. You were going to be visible. There are times you just can't leave. You got something going on and you got to be in the training room. But I think it's important to be seen. You know, you want those administrators to be seen at those games. They like you being seen on that campus in other areas too, you know. So nothing wrong with that at all.
All right, so we're talking about things changing in athletic training. So right now, you know, we do a lot less meetings. We do a lot of online trainings, mm-hmm. and, you know, everything's through email or, you know, either Twitter or Facebook. So how do you think the electronic media has changed athletic training?
Most notably is sometimes the social media world knows about something before I would as an athletic trainer, injury-wise, because everybody loves to post their life story online. And so you'll see a lot of times guys will tweet about an injury when the university hadn't even released that information yet. That's the biggest thing, 24/7 news. You know, it used to be you got your morning news, your noon news, your 6 and 10 o'clock news, and a newspaper. That's all you had. We didn't have the internet. And now it's out there, you know. There's stuff being posted about so-and-so goes down at the game, looks like a knee done return, you know, and you're getting texts and phone calls. Hey, what's up with so-and-so? What are you talking about? You know, they go, oh, well, so-and-so tweeted about, like, no comment, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest thing. It's just everything's right out there in front of you. And you didn't have that back in the day. We didn't have HIPAA back in the day, you know. It's its own beast, and we've learned how to deal with it. But we didn't have all these, again, a policy or law, privacy laws. We're in the need to know. The doctor back then understood. The staff understood. Now you got to have some signed forms and some other things. It's just the nature of the beast.
Okay. I think with social media, one of the ways it's changed is it honestly, I think it's helped me improve, because I find out what other people are doing, and you get to do their best practices. So,
right.
You know, people almost always want to talk about what they did well. So,
right.
You know, on social media, everybody's amazing. And so you get to find out, oh, yeah, well, we've done this, or this, you know, this is our policy, or we succeeded here, or, you know, this cool new exercise. So I get to take some of those and implement them in what we're doing, or, you know, especially at the beginning of the year, all the exertional heat exhaustion stuff.
Right.
People showing off their cold tubs or their tubs of ice and water. And so that's one of those things, you know, it's, oh, yeah, I probably need to look at getting a tub and having ice ready just in case.
Right.
But I wouldn't have thought about that hadn't done that.
Right. And I like social media for those things, you know, the quick shoot somebody a note type stuff. I'm not the guy that I don't have a Twitter account. I've thought about it. My fear is with me is I'll just stay on it all the time, looking what people do, and I'll never do any work. You know, but again, I think there's still something to be said for calling somebody or emailing somebody in this day and age, or meeting up. You know, again, if we can talk face to face, sometimes that's good, because in 160 characters or less doesn't always portray the message or convey it the way you want it to be understood. And sometimes you got to get with them and see it. But, you know, there's a lot of good websites out there now where if you look at social media, to me, that's part of social media.
Right.
There's a lot of good stuff. The NATA think tank is good. I like seeing what, you know, a lot of people are dealing with and going, oh, I've had to deal with that. Let me throw this out there. That's all good, and we're learning from that. You don't necessarily get CEUs from it, but you get good life experience,
right,
and life lessons. And that's sometimes way more than a CEU.
Which brings us to a great point right there. See, this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to take your life experiences and offer people continuing education, because they are educating themselves here by listening.
Right.
And so, again, you know, we're supposed to be doing the live webinar, but my wife is texting me saying that it's not going live. So maybe it's because there wasn't anybody logged in this time. I'm not real sure. I'm using a new system. So, yeah, my wife says she's, oh, I don't know. But anyways, we're doing this to, like I said, continue educating people so that hopefully they can learn how other people have screwed up, how other people have succeeded, and then
right,
kind of go from there. And just in general, improve what we're doing. So it's whether it's going out wearing khaki pants and the polo up to the front office, or, you know, tucking your shirt into games, or getting on Twitter to find out what the latest trend in treatment is, you know, whether to use ice or not ice, and those kind of things. So.
Right.
CEUs. I think they're changing. I know I've seen webinar stuff, and that's kind of what we're trying to do here. So,
right, you know, these I like in the social media standpoint of, you know, a couple of CEUs for doing something like this. But when it gets more technical, you got to be there face to face and be able to ask the question or put hands on to truly understand it. You know, be like, hey, learn surgery online in 30 minutes doesn't work. You know, you've got to be able to put a scalpel on somebody and do those things. So, you know, you're not going to create a physician through online education.
Volunteers? Anybody volunteering for
I've got scalpel? A dull scalpel if anybody wants to let me, you know. No anesthesia. No? So,
all right.
Chickens.
Okay, well, I think, do you have anything else?
No, I'm just responding to what y'all ask.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and close up so these kids can go to lunch. All right, Jose, you ready?
Yes.
All right, good.
We want to thank the people who helped make this podcast possible. GHATS for sponsoring CEU Opportunities, U of H Masters of Athletic Training Program.
And then I think I put it on the other one, Memorial Hermann Southeast for this freaking awesome banner that's behind Bubba, but apparently you can't see it because the live stream's not going on. And that's GHATS. Oh, you could say GHATS, but it is Greater Houston Athletic Trainer Society for allowing us to see the CEU stuff. So, again, we're using the new system. If you're listening live or if I don't edit this out, then it should have been live. But anyways, visit the website, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, where pretty much every Wednesday we're going live, and we've got several of them lined up. Around November, I might or might not be doing the podcast because we're expecting our third child, and I don't know when it'll be born. So, obviously, I'm not going to...
We'll excuse you if you're absent.
Yeah, I'm not going to leave the labor room to come to a podcast, so... you know, but up until then, I've got everybody scheduled, I think, through November 5th. So anyways, check out the sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, and then you can
follow us on Twitter at PHS Sports Med, Google Plus Sports Medicine Broadcast, Facebook.com PHS Athletic Training.
All right, so for Jeremy, Bubba,
Jose,
Adela, and
Jessica,
that's a wrap.